As the Relic of the Crown of Thorns returns to Notre Dame, we learn that the Restoration Project was headed up by this man, who credits the Mother of God for all of it. Plus, why did the Vatican remove this nativity scene? Meanwhile, President Assad and his super scary wife flee the new Islamic regime in Syria, which, according to bishops, politicians, and military experts, means persecution rising for Syrian Christians. Here we go again. Hello again, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Matt. This is the Remnant Underground. We have our Christmas tree installed. Am I right, Walter?
Yep.
Yes, indeed. So happy holidays. Wait a minute. We don't say happy holidays, do we?
And I hate to offend people. So this whole last holiday season, I didn't let out one Merry Christmas. That's true. Instead, I said, may the birth of the one and only true God. Jesus Christ. Bestow a blessing of grace and peace upon your household.
Oh, I'm sorry. Does Merry Christmas offend you? I'm sorry. Now, the Remnant newspaper, friends, before we get started, is our sponsor tonight because we need to keep the lights on and the cameras rolling here. You can order this shirt, by the way. You can order this lapel pin. And there's still time to give this newspaper, subscriptions to this newspaper, either the e-edition or the print edition, in time for Christmas. Can you think of somebody you need still? A friend, family member, the mailman, the pastor? It doesn't matter. Please go to remnantnewspaper.com and check out, especially, think about subscribing to the print edition of the Remnant newspaper. This is, what is this, almost 60 years old. It's the paper of record. It's got some great columnists now from all over the world. We cover everything. Click the link below and join the Remnant Resistance today as we go to war together in 2025, which is shaping up to be, well, an interesting one. Speaking of war, the land where Christ was born, the Holy Land, has become ground zero for World War III this Christmas. Absolutely insane. So they're at it again. Bombs lighting up the night sky over Bethlehem this Christmas. Christians being killed. Christians being driven out. Nobody is talking about that because nobody cares. And if you object, you say, hey, can we stop bombing the kids over there? Whether they're Christians or Muslim, can we stop now? If you say that, of course, you are an anti-Semite. And we had some of them at the Catholic Identity Conference this year, selling the wares, the beautiful wood carvings that they make in Bethlehem. You meet these people and you hear what's going on the ground. You're like, oh my gosh, you know, can people be any more myopic and ridiculous about what they think is actually happening over there? So Francis, to his credit now, I think he tried to show a little solidarity with the Palestinian Christians. But unfortunately now, synodality has relieved all of these guys in the Vatican of their backbones.
The Vatican nativity scene was unveiled on December 7th in Paul VI Hall, not the big one in the piazza. The manger, however, was draped in a Palestinian headscarf, a kafeah, with the baby Jesus nestled atop, which caused a few eyebrows to raise. But by Pope Francis's Wednesday audience this week, the kafeah was gone.
They removed the creche. This doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. I can't think of it ever having happened. So I guess when Israel says jump, even the Pope, even the Vatican's response, how high, you know? Because you all remember the Vatican's homoerotic 2017 naked man nativity scene, right? This one was fine. And let's not forget about that one, that particular nativity set at the Vatican, was met with worldwide protests as well. But you know what? It stayed put. No, nobody removed it. So fast forward now to 2024. Boom! Remove the Vatican's creche! Take it away! After all, you mustn't be nice to Palestinians because, as we all know, those of us who are watching our TV every night, as we all know, they're a bunch of Muslim terrorists.
I always try to tell my child that we don't hate Israelis, but we hate what they are doing to us. My name is Marwan Harb. I'm a Christian living in Palestine, Bethlehem. When I hear that Christians in the West are helping Israel, thinking that they are helping Christians in Palestine, I think they're mistaken. Israel is who to blame. They took everything, man. They took all your life since you were a child.
There's understanding between Christians and Muslims that live here. There's a lot of differences as well.
And who care about us? The Muslim, Muslim Palestinian, they care more than the Christian in the world. So our brother, they are the Palestinian Muslim, not the Christian in the world.
That's funny, once again. Kind of look like us, don't they? Is it okay to talk about those people? Please, pretty, pretty please? People say, well, yeah, well, most of them over there are Muslims, man. And a good Christian, a good American patriot hates all the Muslims, right? Well, I don't know about that, friends. Do we ever get to the point where we get to say, huh, I wonder why the Muslims hate us? You know? Because what's happening right now in Gaza is what's been happening to Muslim countries all over the world for a very, very long time. We have simply been bombing the hell out of their countries. And guess what happens? So young men, young Muslims, they get really mad about that. So somebody, friends, somewhere, it seems to me, needs to take a Christ-like attitude to this and say, gee, I wonder if there's a better way. I wonder if this is what Jesus would do. Do you remember this guy? I'll put him on the screen here. You might look familiar to you. I'm going to play a little clip from this fellow.
I have seen Syria. It is an absolutely beautiful country. It is so sad to see it being so harmed by evil agendas. So sad. The respect the Muslim people of Syria, the respect they showed this Christian, I have never seen it in any other country. In any other country. The Muslims, not the Christians, the Muslims. The Alawiyin. I will never...
Don't forget this guy, this priest, this guy was attacked by a Muslim kid wielding a knife. You remember we did a show on this. This man lost his eye. He was stabbed in the face by a Muslim. And yet you just heard him do something that is becoming, I think, in our world, almost a theoretic impossibility. Nobody even wants to think about it. No one even wants to talk. He forgave him? And do you know why he forgave him? Because he is an adult. I'm sure this fellow, this priest and I have a lot of disagreements over, including theological disagreements. But this man's obviously an adult. And he's a Christian. He's a follower of Christ. And if there's any way to diffuse what's happening in the world today, he wants to lead the charge. God bless him. And so he forgave this Muslim attacker because he realizes, as we do down here in the underground, that the deep state globalists are the ones who are triggering everybody, friends. See, that's why you can't fall for this. When you decide you're going to make your big, brave declarations online about who you hate, who needs to be wiped out, who needs to be carpet bombed, you know, who needs to be taken down, taken out. When you decide you're going to do that, remember, that's exactly what they want you to do. Now, I've worked with Muslims, with Remnant Tours for years, for 30 years. I've had all sorts of experiences with them, good, beautiful, wonderful experiences with Muslim bus drivers. I've never seen this thing that every one of them wants to hate and kill us, right? So what's happening on both sides of this whole thing is these globalist folks are triggering everybody into becoming the idiotic water carriers for their chaotic revolution. They need to destabilize everything, and we're falling right into it. Yeah, man, we hate Muslims too, because we're patriotic Americans. And what that tells me, friends, because I truly believe, as I've said so many times, the only way out of here is for a remnant of Christian believers to keep the faith and to become the just men of Sodom for whom God will forgive and spare the world, right? What I really am fearful of is at this point they're using fear, they're using warmongering tactics to transform all Christians into something that we're not supposed to be. We've forgotten. Too many of us have forgotten what it means to be Christian. You ever think of the word Christian? Well, obviously the word Christ is in there. Christian. One who follows Christ. What does hating anyone have to do with this? His revolution was, forget, love your neighbor, right? Love God as yourself, turn the other cheek. What have we become? Hate your neighbor, bomb the other cheek, right? And I'm not trying to be a Pollyanna, you know, playing the glad game here. I just see our entire world going up in smoke with our children and grandchildren in it, and no one is doing anything serious to stop it. They're watching Fox News. Well, Fox News doesn't have the answer. They're not talking seriously about the kingship of Christ. They're all in on gay marriage. They're all in on early term abortion and contraception and everything else, right? God bless them. I'm glad they're there. It's nice to keep up on the news. But they don't have the answers. I've always said about Fox News, their job, not to be too critical, but their job, it seems to me, is rather than fixing anything, it's just to chronicle. The plane's going down, the ship is sinking, and their job is to chronicle it. Okay. Yeah, it's going to hit the ground, impact in about, a year and a half. Right? That's what's going on there. So we as Catholics, because that's what I said last time, we're called to something entirely different. Our war is entirely different. Our effort to inform ourselves is entirely different because it's all done with a Christocentric vision or theology or philosophy. Everything the Republicans do, everything Donald Trump does, everything the conservatives do has to do, as far as I'm concerned, buying time for us to wake people up to the real war here, to the real agenda, to the Christ-like war plan, game plan, okay? The one that he wants as soldiers of Christ to do. And again, we're losing any sight of what it means to be to be the light of Christ in a world that wants to bomb itself to hell, blow itself up. When I was a kid, when I was young, you all remember this. There was a Muslim guy who tried to assassinate John Paul II, shot him 4 times, right in point blank range. Now, I'm going to play a little clip because the Pope's Christ-like reaction to that assassination attempt shocked and awed the entire world. Because you know why? It was Christ-like.
During a procession in St. Peter's Square, Mehmet Ali Agca, armed with a gun, approached the Pope and fired 4 shots at close range. 2 years later, Pope John Paul II decided to visit Agca in prison. The Pope gave Agca a small gift, a rosary made of silver and mother of pearl. During his time in prison, Agca underwent a transformation. He converted to Christianity. In a surprising turn of events, he visited the tomb of Pope John Paul II in 2014 and placed flowers on it.
Now, you don't have to be a big fan of John Paul's agenda as Pope or anything else to acknowledge that was a Christian thing to do, wasn't it? That was a beautiful thing to do. I don't even mind that there were cameras there for that. So the whole world could see forgiveness at that level, mercy at that level, which led to the conversion to the Catholic faith of a would-be assassin. You see how it works? We could convert the world if we would adopt a similar Christian mentality. There used to be examples of this were all over the place. You remember the famous Scarlet Pimpernel of the Vatican? You know, they made it into a movie. What's the movie, Walt?
Scarlet and the Black.
Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty. He visits the Nazi SS, the commandant, every month in his prison. Even after this Nazi had locked down Rome, and he even eventually tried to kill Monsignor O'Flaherty. And you remember how that one ended?
In the long years that followed in his Italian prison, Kapler had only one visitor. Every month, year in and year out, O'Flaherty came to see him. In 1959, the former head of the dreaded Gestapo in Rome was baptized into the Catholic faith at the hand of the Irish priest.
Now, did you feel that? You almost get goosebumps at something so profoundly, beautifully Christ-like. This is what they're trying to destroy in the world today. When I say don't become that, this is what they're trying to do. Transform us into them. They are the haters, not us. And these men, whether it's Carol Wojtyła or Monsignor O'Flaherty, Father Maximum Kolbe, they had grown up in a pre-conciliar church, in a pre-sex revolution world, where following Christ still meant something, friends. I want to talk about that tonight. We have to make it so that it still means something to us, too. We're not an eye for an eye. We're not revenge, right? Our thing is not to wipe out the world of people who don't like us, even people who want to hurt us, right? Our mission is to change the world, to lovingly lead the world as best we possibly can into the light of Christ. Does that seem silly to you? Because that's the mission. That's what we're doing here. And we've lost track of all that. Lots of it because of the people on TV who are scaring us to death and then telling us you need to hate and fight and blow people up so that they won't get you. Right? So I went to the Holy Land a long time ago, and I was taken around. Our group was escorted around. The guide was a Palestinian Christian. He's a beautiful guy. And there were still many Palestinian Christians in the Holy Land when I went. This was like, I don't know, late 80s. That's all changed. They're all gone. Half of them are dead. The rest are running for their lives. And I just wonder when it became okay to hate Palestinians. And I would ask the same questions for people who are anti-Semitic. When did it become okay to hate Jews? When did it become okay to hate Muslims? When did it become okay to hate anybody who's not part of our tribe? Because that's what this is, isn't it? This is tribalism. That's what they're counting on. Lord of the flies, baby, right? Survival of the fittest. Defend your tribe. Kill the other tribes. The antithesis of Christianity. And right now, friends, I'll talk about this just for a moment. Probably be misunderstood because everybody's heated up right now and the war drums are a-banging right now. War fever everywhere again. Everybody's frayed again. A couple weeks ago, I said it was going to be months out. They're going to be calling us an anti-Semite for not supporting the war. I was wrong. Turns out it was just days because World War III is starting right now. And the same people now on TV, they're definitely telling us to hate this guy here. Now, I don't know him, but do you? Do you know this guy? Way down deep inside, you hate him and you fear him, right? Or if you don't now, you will in a few days because they need you to in order to get behind their new war, the next thing they're going to do here. Got to hate this guy. I'm not saying don't hate him. I'm saying, who is he? Do you really know who he is? I remember one time listening to Rush Limbaugh when we invaded Iraq in 2003. There's a shock and awe going on, right? And I remember hearing a caller. She's from Des Moines, Iowa. She's a housewife. She's a mom of five kids. She's like, I just hate Saddam Hussein. I hate him. What can we do to kill him? We have to exterminate him. When are we going to kill him? Send in the special forces. Well, now it's this guy. Now it's Bashar al-Assad, okay? They tell, we gotta hate these. But these are the same folks. The same folks that are telling us to hate this guy are the ones who just a few years ago, they're still at it, but they told us we needed to get jabbed. Do you remember? They told us we need to lock the world down. Same people. You didn't believe them, right? But now we're like, oh my goodness, well, we must be very happy. This man has fled, and now the Christians are safe. Christians are free at last, baby. That's what they're telling us on TV, but are they? Are our Christians and our Christian brothers in Iraq? Are they free at last? Because there's conflicting reports, you know. And I'm getting some serious 2003 vibes over here right now, aren't you? Especially when if you poke around a little bit, you see a completely different narrative right there before they clean it off the internet. You can still watch this stuff. Catholic bishops, for example, on the ground in Syria saying just the opposite.
لأنه ما في بديل. أنت إذا بتختاري بين الأسد والغابة شو هالثقافة اللي جايبيننا إياها ثقافة داعش إلغاء الآخر قطع الرؤوس ما شفتوهن على التلفزيون كيف عم يقطع رؤوس البشر لأنه مختلف هذا هو الدين هذا ما له علاقة بالإسلام هذا ما له علاقة بالإسلام هذا اعتبار منظمة سياسية إلى أهداف مبعوثة من برا.
So what's your answer to that? He's a brainwashed bishop, right? He was paid to say that, probably. Because you got to do something with it. He's on the ground. He knows more than all of us, and that's what he said. You got to discredit the witness. But, okay, fine. Then what are you going to do with Senator Rand Paul? Is he brainwashed, too?
I think that the Syrian Christians are in danger from this new group, frankly. One of the things about Assad, even though nobody liked Assad, myself included, was he did protect the Christians. That's why it's difficult determining Middle Eastern politics and who you support and what you want. And sometimes it's be careful of what you want. You might get it. You know, Assad's going to be gone, but he did protect the Christians. Wasn't a free country, but he did protect the Christians. And now with him gone, you have jihadists who have been closely aligned with al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, with this Islamic movement that is one of intolerance towards other religions.
What about Colonel Douglas McGregor? Brainwashed too?
We think they're probably going to kill at least 100,000 people if they haven't already done it in Syria. But Erdogan has coached them and say, don't kill everybody. You know, avoid villages that are Christian, avoid certain areas. We don't want to awaken the West to what's happening. Colonel, and ultimately, I think that'll be the end of the Christian community in Syria and probably inevitably what's left of it in Iraq, unless the Shiites in Iraq can protect them as they have in the past. So it's a very grim situation, Judge.
Now, do you see what we're getting at here, friends? I'm not trying to prove anything to you. I'm no expert, you know, but some things just don't line up again. And you just, after a while, you're like, how many times are they going to do this to us? I'm not even mad at them. It's like, yeah, that's what they do. These globalist folks on TV, that's what they do. But how many times do we continue to line up in front of the vat of Kool-Aid and drink deeply? When do we stop? When do we wake up? You don't have to buy into any particular narrative except one, the one I'm trying to sell you right now, give you right now, and that is question everything right now, right? Because it doesn't line up. For example, does this woman seem like the wife of a mass murdering dictator, horrible human being?
President of Syria and Mrs. Al-Assad, Your Majesty. Good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello, very nice to meet you.
Asma al-Assad was born as Asma Fawaz Akharaz on the 11th of August 1975 in Acton, West London. Her father, a prominent cardiologist, and her mother, a Syrian diplomat, raised her as a culturally conservative yet integrated environment. Asma launched social and economic initiatives in her early years as First Lady, but her image crumbled as Bashar's regime turned increasingly violent. The Syrian civil war, which began in 2011, exposed the regime's brutal repression. By 2012, leaked emails showed Asma indulging in luxury shopping while the country was in turmoil.
Boy, she was out shopping, this woman. What does that remind you of? Those are students of the French Revolution, the history of the French Revolution. Remember, the other tyrant, you know, whose wife supposedly said, let them eat cake. You know, why the people were starving, which turned out to be a Freemasonic lie. She never said that, and she died a martyr's death for her country. But in the meantime, everybody has been lying about her for 200 years. Is that happening here? I don't know. I'm just asking. I don't know the answers to any of this, friends. I'm only asking the questions. Because, again, I remember 20 years ago when they lied us into another war against another dictator who they said was gassing his own people. You ever notice that? You can never prove it or disprove it, but he's always gassing his own people. Oh, man. Turns out, in Iraq, we find out years later that the CIA had set that guy up, that particular gassing his own people guy, and then he was responsible for 9/11. You remember all this, maybe you don't. I'm old enough to remember it. And pretty soon we were out doing find the wild WMDs under the pillows of all the Iraqi supporters of Saddam Hussein, right? And never found the WMDs. But they spent millions and millions of dollars trying, looking for them and trying to scare the heck out of everybody. Again, do you ever get tired of this? Do you ever get tired of this game that they're playing with everybody? Because then what did they do? They went and blew up Hussein, they blew Iraq to hell, they shock and awed it all, and they turned all the Christian survivors in Iraq, who he had been protecting, it turns out, at least protecting from the craziest element of the Islamic terrorists, right? He turned all those people into refugees, scattered them all over Europe. That's where they are now, the ones who survived our shock and awe. Now, I know this because I happened to meet a bunch of them up in France, later that year, when they all joined us on the Shark Pilgrimage. Imagine that. Hundreds of Catholic survivors of Operation Iraqi Freedom limping into Chartres Cathedral in France. Catholics. I'll never forget it as long as I live. And we heard they were there. We heard they were with us. Literal refugees from Iraq. Put together a chapter. A whole bunch of them. And at the end, I hadn't seen them for the first 3 days. I only saw them at the traditional Latin Mass inside the Chartres Cathedral. And as they came in, we all stood up and gave them an ovation. It's the first and only time I've ever clapped in church. You know? And those folks had kept the faith, those Iraqi Catholics had kept the faith They didn't hate us. They weren't there to retaliate. You know what they were there for? They were there to kneel down on the stone floor of Notre Dame de Chartres and hear the traditional Latin Mass with us. You have experiences like this, and you sort of look at all the nonsense, the stuff and nonsense, the fake news that you've been fed over the course of your life, and you get real angry about it. You know? So I'm not here in this case to defend this guy, Assad. Like I say, I don't know. I never met him. I don't know what happened over there. And that's just my point. I don't know. And you know what? Neither do you. Neither do you. You know, nothing is black and white. Everything's gray. There's all the middle ground is where it's usually find the truth in something like this. But the only thing that we do know at this point, and experience tells us, that the Christians now are going to start dying in Syria. A lot of them at the hands of now actual terrorists. That's what's going to happen. Because we got rid of the moderate who actually protected the Christians. We got rid of them. And now we're beating the war drums again. And in a few years, we're going to figure it out. We're going to go, shoot, why did we fall for it?
So these are two states with two leaders right now, Netanyahu and Erdogan, who are determined to realize their dreams. And we have simply said, go for it. The problem with all of this is you've unleashed a tiger, at least two tigers, and you don't know where this is all going to end up. And that's why people in Egypt are now very uneasy about the potential for the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt to become another disciple of Erdogan in this great game. It's a very strange situation. It's something nobody expected to see. We have always listened to people with aspirations and show us maps with new territory, but now these aspirations are realities, and the realities are dangerous for the entire region and potentially, depending upon how the rest of the world acts, to the world.
And the only response to that from a lot of people is, yeah, well, man, Israel has the right to defend yourself, man. Well, it's true. But does this look like self-defense to you?
After days of attacks, Israel has destroyed most of Syria's air defenses, one of the region's best. Now the Israel Defense Forces see an opportunity to attack Iran's nuclear sites with far less danger, since the straightest route to Iran is across Syria.
So you think, well, Trump is in, it's all going to get better. Maybe it will. But right now, old Bibi Netanyahu is trying real hard to drag Donald Trump into this war, and we got to pray that he doesn't succeed. But I think the other thing to overcome is this temptation to put everything in the sort of limited history that we did get growing up before they dumbed everybody down. So you think of it as Lepanto, you think of it as the crusade. We're going to go fight the holy war, cross versus crescent. Well, this is not some holy crusade, friends, because the West has lost the faith. Okay? You're not going to see any crosses leading us into battle except for the Red Cross. Lots of that, you know? What you're looking at here, friends, is the New World Order getting ready to rise out of the ashes of Armageddon. Now, they're going to try to make you think it's a crusade because they understand that we still think that way. We still have that in our consciousness. But they're not Christian. They're not even faithful Jews when you talk about Israel. They're not Orthodox Jews. You realize that? They're not following the Mosaic Law. Do you know that? The leaders of that? The folks that are running Israel, the guys that are beating up on the people who are following the Mosaic Law, the Orthodox Jews, you see them all the time protesting COVID, protesting what's going on in Israel, protesting that war over there. So even that little theological hiccup is something you should think about. This is not people who are defending the Mosaic Law. No more than in the West, we are defenders of the cross anymore. So this isn't a crusade. So you say, well, Donald Trump, man, he's going to stop this. He said he's going to stop this. Well, I sure hope so. I sure, and I pray so. And if Israel and the deep state allow him to, that would be great if they allow him to stop this. But I'm getting a little bit concerned. Lots of people are. It seems, in fact, like somebody has already got to them.
With the clock ticking down to the Trump inauguration, we heard his pick for counter-terrorism chief Seb Gorka sound pretty rhetorically hostile towards the Russian president.
To that murderous former KGB colonel, that thug who runs the Russian Federation, you will negotiate now, or the aid that we have given to Ukraine thus far will look like peanuts.
Now, why are these guys who are just nominees and who haven't even gotten off the ground, there hasn't even been an inauguration, why are they out thumping their chests and threatening world leaders? What's going on? What is this, junior high? I like the defense secretary nominee well enough. He's a nice guy, a lot of good things to say. But he actually wants to rebuild the Temple Mount, for Pete's sakes.
2017, the declaration of Jerusalem as the capital was a miracle. And there's no reason why the miracle of the reestablishment of the temple on the Temple Mount is not possible.
Now, you remember that when you grow up, when the temple is rebuilt, it's the end of the world. You remember? It's a sign of the end, of Armageddon, of the apocalypse. He's like, yep, I think we can rebuild the mount. What is happening here? And they call us religious extremists and zealots. What are these people? What does that have to do with making America great again? We got to ask ourselves, how do we see this? How do we see everything that's going on? What's our worldview filtered through? Is it filtered through Fox News and neoconservatism and endless war and gay marriage and abortion and all the stuff that will incur the wrath of God? Or do we wake up one day and realize that our worldview has got to be filtered now, as it was for our fathers, has to be filtered through this mission, this beautiful mission to crown Christ King again? The only answer, until somebody does it, there's going to be nothing but Armageddon. Because this is a war against the kingship of Christ. They're trying to uncrown him. They're trying to dethrone him. That's what it's been about since the start. That's what Vatican II has been about. That's what the revolution of Vatican II. That's what the neocon war game is all about. It's a war on Christianity, a war on Christian morality, a war on the Christian family, a war on life, a war on everyone and anyone who objects to this war on Christ the King. That's us, the last holdouts of Christendom, and we're all over the world. Right now, they're taking out some of our friends in Syria. They will be soon enough. It's war on us. The war on the remnant of believers all over the world who historically friends. And here's where we're going to end on a note of hope, because you know this is true. Because historically speaking, we Christians, the remnant of Christian believers, have always, always, always risen up out of the Christian ashes and the bones of martyrs in order to plant the cross of Christ once again. We've always done that. They've done it in the past, back to the time of Christ, to the crucifixion itself. And we've got to be the ones to do it again now. We have to teach our children to want to do it. That's the answer. That's what we fight for. And that's why Christians are dying all over the world right now. Because the only thing standing between us and Armageddon is this Christophobic new world. The only thing standing between us and that is Christ. That's the answer. That is absolutely the truth. That's what they want you to abandon, but that's the fullness of truth. He's the one, and we are his followers, and even fear of our ancient nemesis, the Muslims, must never transform us into cheerleaders of this demonic neocon march to Armageddon, which is what we're watching right now. That's not our war. That's not a holy war. It's an abomination before God that was only made possible because they made war first on the church, on the Catholic Church. They had to take her down first because she represented the moral authority, the moral powerhouse that would stop the slaughter of children and the slaughter of Christians all over the world. So they made war on her, the church. They made war on the altar and thrones of Christendom. They made war on the princes and kings and queens of Christendom. They made war on the royal kingship of Christ. And traditional Catholics now have been fighting in that war. That is our war. Not electoral politics, that's part of it, but a small part of it. This is the war that we fight. All of our lives we've been fighting this war. So we should be neither surprised nor deceived by anything that's going on right now. We always knew it was inevitable. And so our mission, if we choose to accept, is to go out and find a way to keep the faith of our fathers no matter what. Don't ever give up on it. To continue to hold sacred tradition as our rock. To continue to hold the cross of Christ as our faith, hope in God as our anchor in everything that's going to happen now. Christ is our royal king. This is not a pious little devotion. This is a political strategic strategy. It's the only way out of here. It is the only way out. So I said I'd conclude with a note of hope, and I will, and I want to, and I'm thrilled to, because the reality is, at Fatima, what do we learn from Our Lady? Our Lady, who is the Queen Mother of Christ our King, she made a promise to us. She said, in the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. We know the triumph is coming. And great saints like St. Maximilian Kolbe and St. Louis de Montfort, they predicted that the blessed reign of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, right, will be preceded by the reign of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. This is why the flag that we have in this studio has the Sacred Heart on it, because we are Catholic Americans, and we are in league with the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And now, as if to prove those great saints were right, that this is what's going to happen, Mary, Our Lady, the Queen Mother of Christ the King, has given us a sign. And you know, I've said so many times, it is very true. I am not a signs and wonders kind of guy, but she has given us a sign in the middle of all this. I'm going to close on this. Her cathedral in Paris, France, it rose out of the ashes. We all saw it burn to the ground, just like we watched our beloved church burn to the ground, right? Burning to the ground right now. We watched it burn. We thought it was dead forever. It looked like it would never resurrect, right? And yet, despite every worldly prediction, she's risen from those ashes. Now, here's the thing. We have to learn not to demoralize the troops. When something good happens, we don't have to look for the negative, the worst possible spin. Everybody knows how bad things are. That sometimes we get in the habit of negativity, and what we forget is we need to give people, our children, our young people, our friends, our allies, give them hope. This is a sign of hope. Don't you see what happened? Don't you remember what happened? I've heard so much on the internet about this stupid little table altar. I don't care about that hideous little table altar in Notre Dame. And by the way, it's much better than the butcher block altar that was there before for a lot of years. I've been to that cathedral for the traditional Latin Mass 30 times. It was horrible, that little butcher block thing that was up there, right? But that altar, and now the new one, will be torn out when sanity returns to the church after the war. I don't care about that. Nor do I care about the amazing Technicolor dream vestment that everybody is talking about. I don't care about that vestment. That's Novus Ordo. This whole thing is Novus Ordo still. We should expect nothing more from them on that score. I don't care about the checkered board flag. You know what? It's not a Masonic innovation, friends. I saw that one too. That floor has been checkered board just like that in Notre Dame ever since I can remember, probably for the past couple hundred years. I'm not sure exactly. But that's the old floor, just restored. It's a Masonic. And people say, yeah, but the columns, the vaults, the ceilings, they're so Novus Ordo now. They're so bright and full of color. I hate the Novus. I mean, why did they do? Friends, that's just because that's the way the columns and the vaults and the ceiling, that's the way they were painted in the Middle Ages, centuries ago. What you're looking at in the bright and renovated Notre Dame right now is exactly the way they were painted centuries ago, exactly the way. It's the result of meticulous restoration that brought the old church back to life as she'd always been. Celebrate it, friends. It's good news. Trust me. I told you, again, I'm not surprised by any of this. She's going to be with us. She said she would be with us. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph, right? So, back in 2019, what did I tell you? Sitting right here at this desk, I said that Our Lady's Cathedral, Notre Dame Cathedral, will be restored exactly as it was. Why? Because Our Lady wanted it. You said, no, there's going to be a Starbucks in the tower, and there's going to be a swimming pool in the nave. I said, no, they're going to fail. Our Lady is going to see to it. Well, that's exactly what happened. 5 years later, it's like a miracle. Notre Dame defied the fire, and Notre Dame defied the modernists. Now, what you're looking at here is the crown of thorns, the relic that has been. This is the relic that was brought back by Louis IX. This is why the Sainte-Chapelle was built right down the street from Notre Dame as a reliquary for the crown of thorns that Pope, that St. Louis IX brought back from the Holy Land. Okay? So that crown of thorns of Jesus Christ is making a triumphant return into Notre Dame in these images. And they're chanting, you know what they're chanting there? The ancient traditional Vexilla Regis Prodeunt. Right? Chanting it in Latin. The royal banner forward goes, the mystic cross refulgent glows, where he in flesh, flesh who made, upon the tree of pain is laid. That's an unbelievable sign, friends, what we're seeing on the screen right now. And by the way, for those of you who maybe thought this was all the work of Macron, I mean, to his credit and despite himself, he's the one that wanted it done in 5 years, and it was. But the chief architect of Notre Dame was one of us.
You know, I spent 5 years saying nothing about this because I'm a civil servant in a secular republic, and therefore I couldn't say something like this. But now I have to reveal that, yes, I have a particular devotion to the Virgin Mary, and at the risk of sounding totally crazy or like Joan of Arc, I never stopped feeling support coming from up there. I don't think this project would have been possible otherwise, and I think that's what gave me the strength and determination to move forward, because I knew I was supported from up there.
Did you hear that on the news? Probably not.
Une petite trace de moi.
I left a small mark of myself, he told us. In one of the hooks of the new spire is my face, with an admiring and affectionate look to represent all the companions who rebuilt the cathedral.
And some of those companions, by the way, that he's talking about, those are actually traditional Catholics. Those are people I walked to Chartres with. Those are Chartres pilgrims, some of them. Now, this guy's name is Raphael. He's got a great story. Basically, he's got a long explanation. He was there when Notre Dame burned. You remember, we did some of the coverage on that, you know, when the people of Paris came out and were praying the Je vous salue Marie as in the flames and the shadow of Notre Dame that night, that horrible night. Well, he's explaining he was one of those guys. He was one of the first on the scene at the Notre Dame as she was burning. And he prayed to Our Lady. And then he's explained that it was then and there that he decided to become a carpenter, change his career, he'd been a photographer, change his career, become a carpenter, so that he could personally help bring Our Lady back to life for the greater honor and glory of God, Notre Dame, back to life. So he's saying right here, I started walking the pilgrimage to Chartres. This is where it gets so interesting. I started walking the pilgrimage to Chartres when I was 13 years old. The pilgrimage helps us get closer to God. Notre Dame was always the starting point of the Chartres pilgrimage. Without Notre Dame, we lose our foundation, our base. And so as a Chartres pilgrim, I will once again be able to return to Notre Dame after having helped restore her, because she has restored us. You see what I'm saying about how positive this is, what a beautiful sign this is, and to think that our own people were restoring her, you see? So much good news, friends, so much, such a beautiful sign of hope. You know, as I've said down here so many times, for 34 years, I walked that same pilgrimage that he's talking about, the same pilgrimage from Notre Dame in Paris to Notre Dame in Chartres over 3 days, right? And I have seen, one of the reasons I go back every year is because I have seen the faith that that young man's talking about, Raphael, I've seen that faith coming back to France. France is reverting, France is coming back. One pilgrimage at a time, one pilgrim at a time, but it's coming back. And the restoration of Notre Dame is a symbol of that. It's a sign of that. And that's how we win, friends. Don't you see? Even if nations are annihilated, restoring the old faith, restoring the old church, keeping the faith is our mission. To run the race, in order to run that race and keep that faith, we have to make sure that we never let them make us forget who we are and what we are. Je suis chrétien, the French say. We are Christians. We are soldiers of Jesus Christ, who this Christmas, friends, will stand proudly with our persecuted Christian brothers all over the world.